This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good morning, everyone. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 118 of Within the Trenches. This episode is sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. As I've been saying for the past few episodes, since probably episode 114, a lot has been going on, and it just continues. It continues and continues, and I'm loving every moment of it. There's a lot of stuff I want to get to today. And today is September 20th, 2016. It is the last day for public comment for the reclassification issue, for, you know, we've been fighting this whole time and sharing stories and such to get public safety telecommunicators or emergency professional specialists, whichever one you prefer. I think I like the second one better, but we're trying to get reclassified from clerical through the ONB to protective. So there's been a lot of stuff going on with that, a lot of media coverage. It's pretty much gone viral, and we'll get to that coming up. Also, if you had the chance to reserve a hashtag #IM911 t-shirt from the campaign that was, you know, going on, that I had going on for it, that has expired now. If there is a button on there, so if you would like to still order, you can go ahead and do so, and it'll put you on a list to reserve. So even though it has expired, that first round will end up going out to people, but you still have the chance to reserve that, and I'll make sure to post up that link. I'm going to jump into my guest that I have on. One of the people on here, I have been talking with him via email, Facebook, all other types of shit, smoke signals, anything you can think of. And we have not had a chance to do an episode, mostly because my ass has been busy. So I apologize. But my first guest today, his name is Ryan, and he serves on the 911 Wellness Foundation as well as a consultant for the 911 Training Institute. And he runs the popular blog and through social media outlets for Operation 10-8. How's it going, man?
Good morning, sir.
Oh, hey, you called me sir. I called you sir just a moment ago, and you said, don't call me that. But you can call me sir if you want, I guess.
So that doesn't count. It's a pleasure to finally be on your show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a while. Now, and when we were talking before that, has it been about 2 years?
It has been close to, 2 years, because I've worked with the 911 Wellness Foundation for about 3 years, so... Coincidentally, you and I run in a lot of the same circles and know all of the same people. We just don't know each other.
Oh, man. You know, the crazy thing, too, is that so let's take, the past 6 to 8 months, you and I have been talking and saying, okay, are you going to be at this this conference? No. Oh, crap. Yeah. I'm going to be at that one. Well, what about this one? Yes, I'm going to be there. But then either I had to drop out or you had to drop out. I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, it has been a roller coaster of the last 6 months. We have both been all over the place.
But it's been good, though. It's been good, and we're finally here, and we're going to get this episode out. Now, the my next guest on here, he's a previous guest of the show, and we had an excellent episode. He is a police dispatcher out of Western Canada. He also runs a popular blog as well and social media outlets and such for Dispatch Monkey. Lloyd, how's it going, my friend?
Going good, Ricardo. I feel kind of privileged because it only took me less than a year to get on your show.
Whoa.
Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's going to fly now.
But I've met Ryan in person too, and I haven't met you yet. So Ryan's got one up on you there.
Ah, this is true. That's right. We had an episode when we did our episode, Lloyd. It was, I believe you were telling me that it was either that same week or the following week that you were coming down from Western Canada into California. Now, you were just on vacation, or were you going to a conference, or what was that?
Just on vacation with the family. We drove down to LA and went on a cruise ship to Mexico.
Nice. Was Ryan on that cruise ship as well? Did you pay for him?
No, but I did meet him. We went out to, what was it, the In-N-Out Burger for lunch or something like that?
Yes, sir.
Oh, man. Now, that's kind of a staple over there. When the last time I was in California, or one of the last times I was in California, actually, I had dinner, but it was late at night. It was like 11 or something. I don't know, 10 or 11. And, I had a craving for something. I thought, man, I don't know what to eat. And I was on Yelp and I was looking through and I saw that there was an In-N-Out Burger. And I thought, oh man, I am in the area. I have to go and get some In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I'd had In-N-Out when I was driving truck way back before I started my dispatching career. I, you know, In-N-Out, Sonic. Yeah, it makes truck drivers fat.
And dispatchers.
And dispatchers too, yes.
Oh man, that's funny. Well, that's why they have the those treadmills for dispatch centers now, right? To hook up to the consoles.
No, your caller would be going, why are you out of breath? Right. I'm just going for a run.
Like, we're trying to stay healthy as much as possible. It's not enough that we have stress, but you know, we sit and we eat.
I find it hard enough when I can, like, we can stand up, of course, and I find it hard enough to stand and type. I couldn't imagine like a slow walk and typing, you know? But like, I don't know why when I stand up to type at my workstation, I, you know, I set it all at relatively the same height as if I were sitting. But something in my brain is not calculating that my legs are straight and my ass is not in a chair. I don't know. It's really weird. And then my typing slows down and I have to overthink it. And then I just sit down. I just like, screw it.
Yeah, I actually tested that out back in, 2015 when Ashley Lena was in Nashville? No, it was 2014, I think. Either way, I was there and I actually had an episode with the director of marketing for Zybex, Kathleen. And before she was on the episode, I was there and I got on the treadmill and started walking. And it is actually a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. I mean, it took me a moment to get my balance right, but once I did, I was moving around. There was two keyboards there and a mouse, and I'm looking at the monitors. I thought, hell yeah, I'm doing this good.
Well, if I were to try that, I'm afraid I'd be like one of those YouTube videos where you see the person fall down and then they hit the treadmill and fly off the back. That would be me.
And start doing push-ups immediately.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's it. Just getting some exercise in. We're good. Yeah.
Oh man. Now, Ryan, have you tested out any of those? Like, have you seen them?
Actually, funny that you mentioned that. I think it was about 2 years ago and I tested one with Zybex as well. And Kathleen is a friend of mine and all of the folks there are wonderful people, but I was at their demo booth at a conference like, hey, you know what? I've seen videos and promos on website, blah, blah, blah. Show me how this thing works. Cause I got reservations in the back of my mind about trying to walk in place and type and talk to someone on the phone as well.
Right.
And I don't remember who it was with them, but they said, no, you fool. Like when you answer a 911 call, you're supposed to stop the treadmill, you know, like Lloyd said, so that you don't sound like you're out of breath trying to handle a 911 call or other non-emergency call. You stop the treadmill so that you can, you know, type and perform your duties and responsibilities. I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't know why it didn't dawn on me before that that's what you would do. I thought, well, I'll just continue walking while I talk to this person.
Right.
I felt like a complete moron. Oh, it's hilarious.
Can you imagine doing that? And then the caller saying, okay, hold on a minute. Let's stop for a minute. Do you need help? Like,
exactly.
Do I need to get help for you? Oh man, that's funny stuff. So, because this is your first time on the podcast, Ryan, let's jump into our DeLorean and let's go back in time a little bit and, you know, fill us in on your career and, you know, a brief overview of where you come from so that, you know, more people can, you know what you're all about.
Sure. I am a Southern California native, and I started my law enforcement career actually while I was in college. I started as a little college intern for college credit, and then that catapulted me into an entry-level position that we call a cadet position. And it was a phenomenal experience. And that's when I would say I kind of got bit by the law enforcement bug. and I realized that, man, this is exactly what I want to do with the rest of my professional life. This, you know, this is my calling. Well, I always thought I wanted to be a police officer. And so that's what I trained for. And I went through a police academy and I ended up getting hired as a police officer. And it lasted about 5 minutes before I realized, whoa, this is not for me. You know, going on all the ride-alongs in the world and sitting in the passenger seat is a whole different experience than sitting in the driver's seat and being the one to have to make those split-second life and death decisions sometimes. And, you know, so thankfully, prior to being a police officer, I had worked in dispatch, and they welcomed me back to dispatch with open arms due to short staffing. Shocker there.
Right.
And I thought that was just going to be a temporary thing for me because I had never seen myself working as a dispatcher, at least not long term. So I thought, okay, I'll come back and work in dispatch in the meantime. And before you knew it, 10 years went by.
That's definitely how it goes. Yeah.
With the blink of an eye. And in 2013, I resigned as a telecommunicator and found a home with the 911 Wellness Foundation and have been serving them as their communications specialist. So I handle like a lot of their media requests. I'm basically their PIO, for lack of a better term, for the last couple of years. And then obviously through that, I had the opportunity to meet the remarkable Jim Marshall. And that man has done such amazing things in the 911 industry. Specifically also outside of the Wellness Foundation with his private business venture, the 911 Training Institute. And earlier this year, several months ago, he asked me to join his team there. And obviously you don't say no to Jim Marshall.
Oh, I know, right?
I said, absolutely, sir. What can I do for you? I would love to go on this journey with you. So for the last several months, he and I have been tied at the hip, navigating the waters. And I also have the opportunity to teach a lot of training classes for law enforcement in Southern California through a criminal justice training center, police academy, if you will, here in Orange County. So I stay just busy enough not to go crazy.
Oh, man, I hear that. And going back to Jim Marshall a little bit, it was 2013, actually. This is weird, when I met him as well at Michigan NENA conference. I had gone to some conferences before, but in 2012 was when I really started getting into it because I was blogging like crazy during that time, you know, telling my stories and building up to what everything is now. But 2013 is when I really met Jim through my coworker and forever co-host, Whitney from Allegan. She was the one who actually went to a class and met him. And she goes, "You've got to get him on the podcast or to do something with you, or you just have to meet him, because he's a really good guy." And it was at the Michigan NENA conference 2013 when I met him. That was when I put in my papers for a presentation, just talking about my own 911 story and what I was doing with the podcast. And Jim was on He did a Jedi mind trick on me during one of our episodes, which I've said many times, and he always says, "No, I didn't. It just you just needed a little help getting it out." And I said, "No, man, you got me."
Yeah, these are not the droids you're looking for. I got that same trick too.
Yeah, so he you know he really helped you know with what I was doing there, just kind of talking me through it and saying, you know, this is you don't know what you're sitting on right now. And it was just after that that one of the directors that was there had gotten off the phone with the I believe it was the executive board, somebody on the executive board with Nina, and he said, you're going to the national conference to do this. And I said, what? He goes, I just got off the phone with them and they want you to do it. And I said, holy shit. And I'm standing there just in, I didn't know what to think. And Jim puts his arm around me and he whispers to me, this is where it starts. And I'll never forget that. Like I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about that moment because it's been awesome ever since. So I can relate to you as meeting, you know, Jim, that he's an awesome guy.
Yeah, he is a brilliant man who is, I am fortunate to call not just a mentor, but also a personal friend. So those who know Jim Marshall are blessed beyond deserving.
Now, along with that, you have a pretty good, you know, a popular blog that you're running and you've got, you know, on Facebook and other social media outlets, Operation 10-8. So how did this come about? Yeah. Was it just from your background? You wanted to tell stories as well? Or how did this come about, Operation 10-8?
Yeah, funny enough. It was 2012 and I was dog paddling in the ocean of dispatch communications. And my career was probably close to the pinnacle. I mean, I was at the top and well respected by everybody at the department I worked for. And that summer of 2012, the agency I worked at had a couple of officer involved shootings of white police officers engaged with minorities. And the incident did not turn out well for any of the suspects involved. And there was a very strong backlash, social backlash from the community regarding that, because a lot of the communities in Southern California are minority mixed. And I think that's probably the first time that I remember watching the news and seeing such outrage in regards to this. And so this is, you know, still pre-Ferguson, but it was a time bomb waiting to go off. And thankfully, you know, we got widespread national attention, but I think it could have been a lot worse than it was. It could have been a Ferguson or any of the other places that we've seen those incidents occur. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to one of the officers on patrol, and I remember the conversation. She says, yeah, you know what? It's just a drag now working 2 weeks after this last incident. I'm driving a marked police officer through some of these neighborhoods. And these kids, like 7, 8, 10 years old, will see me drive by and they will grab their crotch and flip me the bird and shout all these obscenities. And, you know, you just shake your head and you look at them and like, these are 10-year-old kids who, you know, now have this mindset that all police officers are bad. I can't do anything because police never come to help me. And if police do come, you know, bad things happen. And I thought, man, what a drag. And so I don't know what spawned that idea, but I thought, you know, if I could give people like a behind the scenes look at what goes on, not just from a dispatch perspective or a police officer's perspective, but from like a public safety perspective in general, then, hey, maybe I could write about this stuff and maybe open some eyes. And if I could do that for just one person, then mission accomplished. And so I just started writing. I started writing. And it was also really therapeutic for me to write about, you know, things that were important to me as a dispatcher and things that I was handling and, you know, working on at the time, and to try and share stories with people about what happens when you call 911 and what it's like for the dispatcher, and not just the caller, but the dispatcher and the police officers and the firefighters and the EMTs who are responding. And so I just started writing, and before you know it, I got a pretty good following of just, you know, general law enforcement and public safety supporters.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, one of the things that I posted when I first started reading your post there was you have this story. I'm trying to remember the name. There's three parts to it. There's one that keeps popping up on my Facebook that I have read, but every time I see it, I read it again because it's talking about, you know, you and how it's come from, and that one is a really good one. So I've been sharing that one a lot.
Well, then to get a little more personal, if you'd like, early on in my career, I had a wonderful mentor who was a police officer at the agency I worked at, and she spent a lot of time with me and a group of others who held positions like me, helping to foster, you know, our professional careers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it just rapidly spread throughout her body, and her physical condition deteriorated. And one day she was at her home and she decided she didn't want to fight breast cancer anymore, and she took her own life. And I was devastated by that. I had handled suicide calls before, but I did not know anyone personally who had taken their own life. But at the time, the department I worked for, there was no peer support team, there was no mental health advocate, there was nothing. And so we weren't really debriefed on the incident. And so then as a result, instead of handling it and addressing my thoughts and feelings like I should have, I basically buried it. And 7 years later, it came back to haunt me when I handled a suicide call. And it was like, you know, release the Kraken kind of thing. And my thoughts and feelings just started getting out of control in regards to the relationship, the professional relationship I had with her, and then other calls I had handled. And I couldn't take it anymore. I needed a break. I needed a break. And there was nowhere else for me to go in the department at the time. And I just decided, you know, if this is the way I'm going to get my break, then I'm going to respectfully walk out of here with my head held high and I'm going to resign.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did. It took months of me going through counseling and a specialized therapy called EMDR in order for me to regain control of some of the thoughts and feelings I was having. And so little did I know that Operation 10-8, my blog, you know, I was writing about public safety issues, but I didn't realize at the time that it actually became the perfect platform for me to share my own personal story of survival and the journey to healing. And before you know it, I, you know, just like you, I started getting messages from other telecommunicators everywhere who would say, you know what, I've handled the same thing. I thought I was alone. You know, nobody understands what we go through, et cetera, et cetera. And it was devastating because I looking from the outside in now, I could relate to these people, but they're still on the inside of the bubble. And for a long time, they felt like nobody in the 911 industry was addressing these types of stressors for them.
Right.
And that is actually, it was while I was still going through counseling and therapy that I stumbled across the 911 Wellness Foundation. And after reading up on them and having some conversations with Jim Marshall, I was like, wow, you know what? I need to be a part of this because I can relate. And that is, the rest is history, my man.
It's crazy how it seems that we're all brought together because of, well, of course, the common thing, you know, thin gold line, dispatch, you know, our stories and stuff, but it gets you know, deeper than that, because we're trying to find not only, you know, like an outlet, but we're trying to relate, but we're, you know, we're learning from each other and we're healing. And that was, I think that was one of the things that which I'll get to more here in a moment, but it was a QA that I did for 911 Magazine. And I had said in there that we're all healing, whether we know it or not, we're healing by sharing stories. So you're healing, I was healing, and the people that related to what we were doing, the same thing. And then, you know, Lloyd also, you know, he's got his blog Dispatch Monkey, and there's a lot of things that he posts that I find myself, you know, chuckling at or thinking, oh man, that's right. And so Lloyd, you've been doing a lot of stuff with your blog as well, and you've gained quite a following now as well, you know, building up on this, and I see it going a lot further.
Yeah, it's been actually quite interesting. I've only had the Dispatch Monkey thing for about a year and a half. I hit 1,000 likes back in June on my Facebook page, and now I'm at 1,640. So it's growing exponentially, and on my Twitter, the same thing. Like, I've been posting, you know, things that are humorous, things that I find that were helpful to me, or a good article about mental health in regards to first responder mental health and dispatchers specifically, and just supporting the community in that way. And, you know, I've been getting these followers too. And I've been, you know, had some messages like, you know, about just some of the stories that people have found humorous, or like, oh yeah, I had an experience like that. Or, I, you know, had other people contact me, and, you know, one lady who had was working on, something for her master's. And she used to be a dispatcher, and she sent me a message, we need to talk. And this was shortly after I had that article published with Ryan. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted her and whatnot. And just certain, you know, just the way it was growing. And it got to the point where I actually had to bring on an admin, because it was, you know, it was getting really busy, and I was finding myself, it was almost taking me over. And I was, my wife's like, you are not that monkey. And I'm like, yes, yes.
No, exactly how you feel.
Yeah. Now, so, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I think I remember when we did our episode, you had not brought anyone on yet as an admin. If I remember correctly, you had not brought anyone on yet, but we were saying that if you got a lot more busy, that you were going to have to. And it was a short time after that, that you ended up bringing somebody on. And I think we messaged back and forth on Facebook about it, but I chuckled because I said it was going to happen. You're going to have to bring on help, because it's hard doing it by yourself, trying to manage it and keep pushing out fresh content for people to see. And, but yeah. I, you know, I'm the same way. My wife would tell me, you got to pick one day at least that you're not doing the stuff on the side, because you work all week and then you've got the podcast, and I'm sitting there itching to share something. I'm like, okay, no, I'll put it away.
Yeah. I've had to really, be quite mindful of, the fact that, you know, I've had to, that I was too busy, and it was taking over. So hence why I brought on the admin, and her name's Kristen, and she's been doing a great job.
That's awesome. Now, so as I said earlier, today's September 20th. It's the last day for public comment to be sent off to the OMB for this whole reclassification issue. And I just want to get, you know, the opinions of, you know, the both of you, from, you know, what do you think about the reclassification, as a whole, you know, in general, your thoughts on it. And then I'll have another question for you after that on, you know, the aftermath on whether or not they do this or not. So Ryan, what do you think about this in general, the reclassification and, you know, the whole push to get this done?
Well, I think it's long overdue. However, more importantly to me and to a lot of folks, aside from the quote unquote reclassification in and of itself, it's funny how the last couple of months, at least or so, since organizations like APCO and MENA have been, you know, working with government offices to change this, how dispatchers have finally felt that they have a voice in this. And when your hashtag #IAM911 took off, you know, it reinforced that feeling for dispatchers, and that, you know what, we're not forgotten voices that just sit behind computers and talk on the phone who are never seen. You know, these are some of our stories. And reading some of the stories that you've shared on your site and other pages have shared on their sites with that hashtag, you know, it is awe-inspiring to see what some of our fellow brothers and sisters in this field go through. And for so long, they have felt like they're alone and nobody pays attention, nobody cares because we're, quote, just a dispatcher.
Right.
When in reality, you have brought to light that we're not just dispatchers, telecommunicators. We are the very first responders. And I think that is what's more important in all of this, aside from the reclassification. You know, that has that is important, and there are issues with that as you and other organizations have tried to address. But I think the social movement you created in reminding dispatchers that they do more than just sit behind computers and talk to people on phone. We're not telephone operators. We're not secretaries or clerical admin. We are emergency public safety telecommunicators that handle stuff on bad days for people. And those stories remind not just dispatchers that they're not alone, but they also remind the general public of what dispatchers do. And I think because of that, your social movement has seen more success and has been more brilliant in your creativity. So, you know, my hat is definitely off to you, and much respect for even coming up with that idea. Brilliant idea. And it's amazing how it's taken off and has gained so much support.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that a lot. more than you know. I just thought that by sharing a glimpse, just a short snippet, you know, identifying I am that person who spoke to you, almost like I'm having a conversation, you know, with that person, like I'm telling them they're never going to meet me. You know, there's a slim, very slim chance that I would ever meet that person, but, you know, talking to them and putting it out there, like I put in that first one, I heard your last breath the night you flipped your four-wheeler. You know, it's claiming, it's identifying, but it's also strong and compelling. And it, hence, I am 911. This is what I do. This is who I am. And it took off. I can't even tell you the craziness of when it first took off. I was in Florida on vacation. This was right after the APCO conference in Orlando, and I was going to my mom's house and my siblings to visit them for a cookout. And I had my son with me, and before we left my in-law's house, I got this picture and I put it together in Photoshop. And then I posted that first post that's pinned on the Facebook page right now for the podcast. And I hit send, and I remember saying out loud, well, we'll see what happens. And, you know, my son just looked at me and just kind of nodded his head. And I said, all right, let's go. And we took off. And as I was driving to my mom's house, my watch was going off with notification after notification after notification. And I thought, oh, I don't know what that is, but I thought it was just emails that I was getting. So when I got to my mom's house, then I looked at it at my phone, and there were comments, shares, likes all over the place, and people started sending messages right away with their own stories. And I thought, holy shit, what have I done? but in a good way, of course. You know, I was happy. But then as it continued, and Lloyd, I mean, you were sending me messages as well saying there are people now, and this was probably a couple days into it, there are people in Australia and the UK and stuff using hashtag IM99 and IM000. And that was amazing. I thought the whole thin line, thin gold line is backing this and they're sharing it. And it's amazing. Like we're healing, we're learning. And then callers, when they started jumping in on it as well and sharing their side and thanking dispatch, that was something I never expected. And in the comments, you know, that the people are sharing that, and then the stories that I was posting as well and that my team was posting, you know, dispatchers are commenting to those pictures and stories and saying thank you. You know, they were saying thank you back from those callers because they were finally getting that acknowledgement. I mean, it's a thankless job, and no, we don't really always care about a thank you because we do what we do and we get our shit done the best to our ability and we're amazing people, but a little recognition goes a long way. And this has been huge.
Yeah. When I got that message from you way back when you started and you had messaged me and Ryan and a few of the other pages that you've, you know, had support from and say, can you help me out with this? So I started, you know, retweeting and reposting Facebook, put on a few of my own, and I was seeing it taking off and I was reposting and retweeting stuff just constantly for a couple of days. And then I saw, I was posting one of my own stories and I was typing hashtag I am, and then I saw this 999 pop up on the Twitter, like, you know how it sometimes will give you the options of what you want,
right?
Like,
yeah.
I am 999. So I checked it out and I'm like, because I knew that Britain used 999, and I was like, holy cow, and there was a ton of I am 999. So I messaged you that, and then I posted another one of my own like the next day. One of my followers in Australia sent me a message and with a comment and said, don't forget about us down here in Australia. I am 000. And I was like, whoa, you know, and I messaged you and you're like, that's crazy. Like it's quite incredible. Like, you know, Canada, US, Great Britain, Australia, those, you know, we're, you know, four quite, you know, large countries. And we're also so far away, with the exception of Canada and US, of course. But I reposted some of the IM999s and the 000s, and I had hashtagged partners across the pond and hashtag dispatchers down under. I don't think that took off really at all. But it was really neat to see how the thin gold line was coming together around the world.
Yeah, it's incredible. I got a message from a girl a week ago, I think now, and she was out of New Zealand, and they use 111, and she didn't have a story, but I mean, it was only because. What she was telling me was that she has been playing with the idea of getting into 911 dispatching or 111 dispatching rather, and reading all of the stories. And when, as I was reading it, I thought she was going to say reading all the stories. I decided it wasn't for me, but she had said that reading all the stories confirmed her wanting to be in this career, this professional career, and do it. And she was going to go for it. And I thought, damn, that is powerful as well. That's awesome to read something like that.
Wow. That's amazing. When I was reading some of these stories, like I do just police dispatch, and here where I'm from, as far as I understand, it's different from California, where our PSAP is the fire EMS. And then the police are secondary. So you call into 911, fire, police, or EMS, they ask you, and then if it's police, they forward on. So we don't get those calls like the EMS dispatch does with the heart attacks or the initial. I found my loved one hanging in the garage and then having to walk them through checking on their loved one or whatever and walking them through CPR. And I was reading those stories from the EMS dispatch side of things. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I could handle that. Well, I probably could, but I don't envy the EMS and the fire dispatchers who have to take those first. We get a lot of calls that they end up forwarding to us, like the 911 hangups. And there's the odd time where it is something like that, but we take our information and we forward them back for the EMS portion of things to the 911 dispatch, PSAP that is, and they take over the medical stuff. So I've never walked through a person with CPR, and I can only imagine what it must be like.
Yeah, it's when I dispatched, we did everything. We did fire, EMS, and police, and we even did silent observer stuff. So we did a bunch of stuff there. Now, Ryan, when you were dispatching, did you do all three, or was it specific for police?
No, I was just police. But however, contrary to Lloyd in Canada, in California, police is the primary answering point. And so we would answer calls. And then if we found out that they were medically related only, then we would transfer to fire and EMS.
Yeah. So I can't even tell you how many calls I took where sometimes I in the back of my head, I thought, oh man, if only I could switch or transfer this off, but it was all me, you know, and my team at the time that they would be working. Cause there was, we had five consoles. One of the positions was for supervisor, but we had the max that we would have on was four people. The minimum was three for the entire county. And a lot of the times it was just three of us that was doing this. So there was one main call taker for the entire county. And then on the other side of the room was our lean position, which was backup phone and main radios for law enforcement. And that backup also did fire and EMS, but that lean terminal was, you know, for your warrants and your license checks and such. And then of course you had the main law enforcement radio. And I can't tell you how many times it would be, you know, balls to the wall, busy in dispatch. And I would have to put people on hold on like harsh medicals. I would have to put them on hold because there was nobody else to answer the phone. And it wasn't, you know, because we were short staffed or anything, but we could run the entire county with three people. There were just those moments, of course, in every dispatch center that you just get that busy that you start having to triage your calls as they come in. And I remember, you know, taking, like I said, a medical with somebody either having a heart attack or, you know, something to that effect and having to put them on hold and pick up the other line and say, Allegan 911, do you have an emergency? And they would, a couple times people would say, well, of course I have an emergency. Why would I be calling 911? Okay, tell me what your emergency is. Well, I'm late to, you know, to this parade and I need to know what the times are or something, you know, stupid like that. And I would say, that's not an emergency. I'm putting you on hold. And I would put them on hold and go back to the next one. So these stories, you know, they're a glimpse into stuff like that. And probably some of those people maybe had to have been put on hold too. People don't understand that, but that's why it's good that this took off because it's opened the eyes of the public and everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I'm in where I'm from, you know, dispatch, we're not actually in a clerical, considered clerical. Like for us, we're considered law enforcement support. So we actually have, basically the designation, already when I found out that you guys down there are first responders in the sense of the legislation. I was like, wow, that kind of sucks. And then that kind of explained to me why my American counterparts are paid so much less than, you know, what they deserve. And so I jumped on board with you because I have a lot of American followers. Mm-hmm. And I was on board with the IM911, and I started pushing that with you because it's so important, because if you're not considered a first responder, many times down there, you guys don't have access to the things you need for mental health, especially, that is such an important thing, because if you can't stay healthy mentally, or you don't have those supports from your agency, you're going to burn out and you're not going to be a 911 call taker for very long.
Right. And, you know, on the other side of that too, one of the things that kept coming up during this whole time from the start of the movement and until now, you know, people have been asking, so what are the benefits? What are the benefits going to be? And I had to make sure to ask Jameson, who's the second VP of NINA, when he was on the episode, when we were talking about the reclassification issue, you know, he was saying that, you know, the benefits as of right now, there's no real benefit. So technically this is a descriptive and respect type thing for the reclassification. However, it's not to say that down the line, you know, like you're saying, pay wise and such, and maybe even retirement, that the benefit won't happen. Because that could definitely happen, but it's more something down the line. We've got to get past this this hurdle first, and then each state, I guess, is how, you know, retirement age is done. You know, they would have to do something for that, because, you know, the state of Ohio might not be the same as the state of Indiana. So if theirs is 25 years to retire for law enforcement or that protective class, it might not be the same thing in Indiana. So, you know, those benefits won't change right away. It's not to say that it won't happen. It could happen, but as of right now, it's a descriptive and a respect type thing. And I think that's something that, you know, 911 professionals have wanted for a long time here, is that, you know, we want to be seen as part of the frontline team, as first responders or the first responder.
Yeah. The respect is where it starts, because if the legislators respect what you do, then they'll begin to honor that, and the benefits will all fall in line, like the retirement benefits, the pay benefits, the mental health helps and such like that, that they give police officers and firefighters and EMS. Those will all start to fall in line when the respect happens.
Right, exactly. And the most awesome thing that, you know, that really happened was that the news media took hold of this and started pushing this as well. KSLA, they did a piece on this, and I was on Skype. The funny thing is that when I was doing this, it was right before it started, and I sent them a message and I said, I'm just doing a mic check. I got to set something up. And I was in a room that I use at home to record, and I had my wife come up, and I said, I need you to help me with this. I said, I don't have a backdrop. I said, looking at the camera, how does it look? And she goes, it looks bad, because you can see all the kids' toys in the background. And so we had this this push rack type thing where you can hang up coats and such, but it's portable. And she got this huge gray blanket and put it over it so that it was a backdrop for me while I did it. And she goes, how does that look? And I said, honestly, I look like a creeper or something, because of the way the light was hitting in the shadow. You couldn't see my face that well, so we had to adjust it so that I could actually, you know, they could actually see me. And it turned out good. But it was funny that her and I were scrambling to get this set up, and she's moving it. How about this? No, how about this? Yeah, that looks kind of good. Well, is it good or is it not good? I'm like, okay, it's good. But Yeah, the media took hold of it and they pushed it out there. I mean, for those who are listening, if you go to Google and you just Google hashtag IM911 space news, there are news stories all over the place. And a lot of them are local affiliates in a bunch of different states that are sharing the same one, but still they're sharing that one, that main one, and it's going all over the place that they've been sharing it on. So that was a great thing. The establishment wrote an excellent article. The countless bloggers that also were sharing on IM911, 911 magazine recently today just posted up an article for a Q&A that I did, and that turned out, you know, really good as well. So, you know, a lot of people have been pushing this, and it's been amazing. I mean, industry partners as well. And then, of course, I can't forget Congresswoman Norma Torres. Holy crap. That was it was a short episode. It was probably one of the shorter episodes that I've done. It was 30 minutes or just under 30 minutes. But in those 30 minutes, it was so fun to talk to her. It was almost like we knew each other forever. I mean, and she started it out by giving her dispatch number when she worked in LAPD. And right off the bat, I knew this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, that was a good episode. It's I listened to that and I'm like, LAPD. Oh, wow. That she must have heard some crazy, crazy stories. Well, same with you, Ryan. You're in that greater whole area. And whatnot. We do, where I'm at, we do a lot of rural policing and towns and whatnot. And just I've often thought that I'd like to go and sit with like a big city dispatch like that, like LA or Toronto or something like that.
Yeah, Ryan, you're going to have to hook us up. You know some people?
You know, I used to. I'm not sure that they would welcome my sit-along recommendations anymore. But you're right. You know, that's funny, too, because it is a completely different feeling working in small-town USA versus big-city USA. And even though your dispatchers do the same job and fulfill the same role, the experience that they have in working for that jurisdiction varies greatly.
Yeah, it was
like Canada. I would assume it's the same in Canada, right, Lloyd?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, our city to rural policing is very different. It just the things that we deal with, and like we do city and rural, so it'd be you know, things like the armed robberies and such. But then we get things like, actually, I posted a story. There was a report of a herd of goats that were next to the highway. And so I dispatched that to, the agency there, and they're like, okay, can you bolo those goats to the next, one down, the next agency over? And I was like, you want me to bolo goats? It was this herd of 30 goats. And I'm looking at the map and I'm like, they're 20 miles away from the border. Like, what's going on? Why am I boloing goats to them when they're 20 miles away? So it was just like really funny. And I tried not to laugh on the radio, but I was like, okay. So I go over and I bolo these goats and they're like, goats? I'm like 10-4, and that was it. I couldn't go any further. So the difference is like are you know, interesting, we'll put, like, but I've not done a big metropolitan area like LA is, and that must be an experience in and of itself.
Yeah, I think I can top your goat story, because I once had to enter a call dealing with snails.
What?
Yeah. So I got a phone call one evening of a guy who was having a dispute with his neighbor because the neighbor who lived next door was taking snails from his own backyard and throwing them over the fence into my reporting party's backyard. And, you know, working in a very busy, dynamic city, like, we don't have time for that kind of stuff. You know, there are other exigent priorities going on that we have to handle. So, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Reporting Party, but this is not a reason why you would call 911. And let me remind you, he's sharing this with me over 911. And so he used a couple of magic key buzzwords, which basically left me with no choice but to enter a call for service and dispatch police officers to this guy's house because the neighbor next door was throwing snails over the fence. And you can imagine the feedback I got for entering that kind of call. It was ridiculous. But, you know, that just goes to show, too, that not only do we dispatchers vary differently according to where we work, but also the type of calls that we have to deal with daily. And right. So imagine answering a call like that with goats and snails, and then the very next call you answer is, you know, a baby not breathing or someone choking or a traffic collision with injury.
Right.
The spectrum just varies so greatly, and the roller coaster of emotion that dispatchers experience is just indescribable. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's why your movement, that's why your hashtag movement has been so wonderful, because no matter where you work, no matter who you work for, police, fire, EMS, it doesn't matter. It's reminded us all that we're all in this together.
Right. And I think that's one of the biggest things too, to really remember, as you're saying, a lot of people who sent messages in, they said, they were saying, you know, I've kept this story in for so long. Now I'm able to get it out, and reading all the other stories, it helps me know that I'm not alone. And yeah. That, oh man, that was the biggest thing. And people saying, you know, that we're all in this together and we're here for each other. And I can't even, it's just been amazing. I mean, I can't even find enough words to, I'm going to have to get a thesaurus out pretty soon to find other words for amazing and incredible, because I keep using the same ones, but there's no other way to explain it. But going back actually really quick to both of your stories, I don't think I can top those, but I did have a call once where, and this was, it was funny to me because, the state trooper who took the call, he called me up, okay. So I'll go into it. So I take this phone call. Michigan had recently passed their, medical marijuana law. And if you are a grower, you can have up to 12 plants to grow. Now, if you're also a caretaker and you have your own patients, if I remember correctly, you can have 12 plants that you can grow per patient. So that's a lot of marijuana plants that you can grow in Michigan if you are, you know, legally licensed to do it. So this person called up and said that they were calling because their house was broken into and all of their marijuana was stolen. And I had to have them repeat it really quick because I wanted to make sure that's what they told me. And it was, and they had their license, you know, to show that they're legally able to do that in Michigan. And I put it in and radios gives it out, the radio side. And the trooper calls up on the radio and he goes, can you go over to the lean channel? Because we would usually use the lean channel for any extra information because it's not monitored or it can't be monitored by anybody else because it's encrypted. So he goes over to it and he goes, who took that call? And I said, don't worry about it. I'll answer it. So I key up and I said, it was me. This is Ricardo. I took it. And he goes, all right, I'm going to call you. And I said, okay. And so he calls up and he goes, are you effing kidding me, man? And I said, I'm sorry, bro. I said, yeah, I'm serious. This is a call you're going to have to go on. And he goes, I went to the academy and I did all this stuff to stop, you know, any drugs, no matter what it would be. And I'm going to take a larceny of marijuana. And I said, yeah. And he goes, man, I said, awesome, isn't it? And he just started laughing, and he went out there. I mean, and he did it. I mean, it was larceny of marijuana. So it was pretty funny to have to do that. And he was just dumbfounded at the fact that he had to do that. It was good stuff.
Kind of seems backwards, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So going into the wrap up of this episode, again, I've said it twice now. I'm going to say it the third time. This is the last day for public comment, September 20th. And, you know, posing the question of what if the OMB decides not to reclassify? What if they decide to deny the public comment or take it into consideration, however, deny it either way and not reclassify 911 you know, dispatchers, professionals as, you know, in the protective class? Where do we go from here? Ryan, what do you think?
That is a great question. But I think a lot of your dispatchers and some of these national organizations that have been advocating this change are going to feel self-defeated. But what they don't realize is quite the contrary. If nothing more than dispatchers are not reclassified, it's brought us all together. It has raised self-awareness for important issues that your frontline telecommunicators deal with on a daily basis. And through that self-awareness is going to come further education, which is going to spawn research, which is only going to help everyone later down the road. And we got to remind ourselves that very rarely does change ever happen in this industry overnight. You know, it takes a long time for the wheels to get moving. And we got all the time in the world, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
If it doesn't happen this year and we have to wait another 10 years until they revisit this, you know what? So be it. But look at everything that we have accomplished in the last couple of months, specifically with your movement, and reminding dispatchers as well as the public of the duties and responsibilities that we fulfill. And the feelings of self-validation that you have given dispatchers, like Lloyd described earlier, is going to help them battle feelings of compassion fatigue, career burnout, and leaving a job that they might really love, you know, like you and I had to do, Ricardo.
Right. What about you, Lloyd? Where do you see this going if, you know, the continuation of this, if for some reason they decide not to go on with the reclassification?
Well, the way I think about it is like Ryan said, is the awareness is now out there and it's drawn together 911 dispatchers, not only across the US, but supporting each other across the globe. And that's a major accomplishment in and of itself. Now, if the OMB doesn't reclassify, I guess it'll have to be revisited in, you know, 10 years, 15 years, or whenever they reopen that up again. But hopefully by that time, there'll be not only just the awareness of the stories that are going on, but somebody's going to take notice of this. And they're going to start taking some different statistics. And they're going to look at 911 dispatching in, you know, through the lens of I am 911. And be able to start looking for the stats that the OMB probably will want, because they're politicians, they see the numbers, they see the stats, and that's what they want. So that's gonna probably start some really good research for down the road if it's not accepted.
Right. Yeah, I see it going the same way. And just to reiterate, Congresswoman Torres, what she ended up saying was, I hope the OMB does the right thing. And hopefully they do. If not, though, going on from this, I fully agree with the both of you. And she also said that, you know, she's going to you know, start doing some stuff with legislation to get something passed as well. So, you know, as she was saying, she hopes it doesn't go that route. She hopes the OMB does the right thing. And, you know, I'm hoping for the best, but this is really, you know, the whole movement has gone completely beyond reclassification. As we were saying earlier, it's important. It's definitely important. However, what's come out of this has been so much bigger than I would have ever thought. And before I go into my piece of the wrap up of this, Ryan, you and Lloyd, for those who are listening, if they want to find you on social media, hook it up with your links. Let's plug away on Ryan. You can go first. Operation 10-8, Wellness Foundation, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. Go for it.
Yeah, the 911 Wellness Foundation you can find on Facebook and Twitter. The 911 Wellness Foundation has a public page that we use as an organization, but there is also a closed group available for dispatchers to join, which helps them network professionally and find various types of support services. Jim Marshall's 911 Training Institute is his private consulting firm where he teaches various types of training classes to help build resiliency and optimize the overall health and well-being for 911 dispatchers. And then my personal blog, where I just like to write and share funny stuff, serious stuff, is called Operation 10-8.
All right, excellent. And then Lloyd? Your social media links and your blog and stuff.
Okay. Facebook page, you can find me. I'm Dispatch Monkey, or you search at Dispatch Monkey. You'll find him. Twitter is at @Dispatch_Monkey. And then my blog is dispatchmonkey.wordpress.com.
Excellent. So for those who are listening, make sure you check out both of them and everything that they just put up. I'll make sure to put up the links as well on the post for the podcast when I put it on thejabberlog.com. And I just want to take a moment really quick before I completely wrap this up for this episode to say thank you. I can't thank everyone enough who has shared a story, who is thinking about sharing a story. Today is the last day for the public comment, but the movement's not ending. It doesn't end here. It will continue on. Any stories that you have that you want to share, send them to us on Facebook. You can do it on Twitter if you've got a meme already, or text, however you want to do it. Just make sure to put the hashtag #IAM911. This has been an awesome experience, and it's gonna continue on. There's a lot of things that can come out of this, and I'm working on a lot of stuff. So there are going to be some announcements that are going to be coming up pretty soon here. But let's keep this going. I mean, we've raised the awareness, and it's out there. You know, the once unsung heroes of public safety are now out in the spotlight. And I've said it before, but it's about damn time. And we're going to keep going with this. So all of the news media, Congresswoman Norma Torres, the countless pages, the bloggers, especially the entire Thin Gold Line, everyone who has been supporting this, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I can't even tell you how awesome this has been. But also for those listening, if you want to, if you have any questions or comments, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter. That's @911podcast. And this episode, along with all of the other episodes of the podcast, can be heard 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everyone. And of course, this episode and all episodes are sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.